Reveal 3. So here you are with a name that you didn't like very much.
I didn't like it. I felt that it didn't suit my personality, and found it strange not to be called Basha or Barbara. I really stopped knowing who I was at that point.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it, your sense of identity, because I was going to ask you about your conversion in 1940 to the Catholic Church. Did that mean much to you at the time?
It made no difference whatsoever. I was who I always had been. I really can't even remember the actual baptism in church.
Did you have to learn any prayers or anything about the New Testament, for instance?
No, I didn't at all. But my parents did, but I didn't. But I already knew the prayers from school, because you get a certain in the morning. So it seemed very natural that I should go to church. In fact, people who knew me said that I became quite a devout churchgoer. I can't remember that, but so I'm told. It just seemed perfectly natural. I think probably it was more natural than being Jewish and being different.
Also, before we go on with your story of meeting the priest, you know, in this area outside of Warsaw, if I could just take you back to the ghetto at this time, it would have been 1942 when you left, is that right?
Either end of July or beginning of August, I can't remember the actual date.
Was there any sort of resistance, so far as you knew at that time, within the ghetto? Did you have any idea of the uprising that was to come?
No, there was none at all. At that point, people were resigned to it, and everybody was sort of trying to save themselves. The very poor people and those who were starving were reporting voluntarily. But there weren't enough for them to fulfill their purpose, which the Germans were increasing all the time. I know at one point my mother went to see the president of the council, Adam Chernyakov, to ask if he could extend any security assistance to my grandmother. And she always recounted what a traumatic meeting that was for her, because on the wall behind him was a portrait of my great-grandfather. And Mr. Chernyakov said, "I'm sorry, I get requests like that night and day. I can do nothing."
Was that the last time you saw your grandmother?
Behind that church, when I refused to take the gold bracelet, yes. We spoke to her on the telephone afterwards, when she was in that hospital, and my mother was desperately trying to arrange for her, my nanny to come out, and my nanny offered to help her. But before it could all be arranged, the Germans removed people from the hospital, and she was taken on a transport, and I believe she perished in Treblinka camp. The problem with her was that she had more Semitic features, and because she was brought up her youth in German schools, she had a slight accent when she spoke Polish, contrary to my mother and myself. I never had any more contact with her.
Yes. Well, were these sort of important factors for hiding, you know, if you were Jewish, the way you looked and your language was
very much so, and the way you behaved, the way you spoke, the way you communicated with people. When we came back from the country, we went to stay with Mrs. Bedetska, whom I mentioned before, but the problem there was that her daughter, Yola, was very involved with the underground, and I'm not quite sure how to translate the grades of the Arabic girl guides. First there was a unit, then there was whatever the next one, and she was at the top, she was in charge of a whole area. Well, I was very conscious of the fact that she was involved, and I wanted to join in. But there was resistance that I faced a double danger, and so did everybody else whom I would be in contact with. Well, at that point, we were waiting for papers. We got the papers from the priest, and he offered to put me into the convent of the Phoenician sisters outside Warsaw. It was a convent with an elementary school attached to it. And I arrived there on the 14th of February. I remember the date because that order, I think, originated in the States. And they were celebrating Valentine's Day, which was something very new to me.
So that would have been 1943, would it?
I think it was 43. I can't remember, but I think it was 43. And I was there for a few months. But in the holidays, I came to stay with Mrs. Vedenska. And I can't remember where my mother was hiding at that time. But she was somewhere else. Now, while I was at the convent, I felt quite comfortable accepting my name and being called Maria all the time, which I didn't like. So, and Mrs. Vedenska used to come and visit me, always bringing me some little tidbits of food so that I was still in contact and I knew that my mother was all right. So after a few months, I found that she turned up and said that I had been asked to leave because another girl was recognized as being Jewish. I can't remember her name or anything about her, but apparently she told the sisters that if she had to leave, so would I, as I was also of Jewish origin.
Did they not know that originally?
No. I was placed there by the priest. He recommended me. And I think the story which was generally always told was that my father was a Polish officer and I was married. Because there were lots of children whose fathers were officers who also had to be in my life.
Well, how did you spend your days during this period in the convent?
Oh, I went to school. That was quite normal. Life was quite normal.
Sort of
we had to go to church terribly early in the morning, every day. When I had a period when I probably pre-adolescence, when I used to faint regularly. So my friends used to sort of converge around me because that was a way of getting out of church early. They had to escort me out for fresh air. Other than that, we had lessons. And normal sort of boarding school life. At Easter, I went to Mrs. Vedenska. No, I didn't go to Mrs. Vedenska. At that holiday, I stayed with one of the girl guides, who was of the same age as I. And it's a Polish custom on Good Friday to visit many churches to see the tombs of Jesus. And we went up to the old city, which adjoined the ghetto. And I remember the farmers, because that was when the ghetto uprising started. And I remember the farmers and the shooting, and I was told that there was an uprising in the ghetto. But of course, nobody knew that I had been there. I'm probably mixing up dates, but I was allowed to join the girl guides, one of the youngest units. And I stayed with the family of one of the girls, Hanka Nowodwórska. Her father was, used to be before the war, the president of the Lawyers Association in Poland. I don't know what it means for Poland or for Warsaw. But he was arrested by the Germans who they occupied Warsaw and was finally released in such a condition that he died. It was a family which was known for its right-wing views, and I stayed there, and I remember one evening sitting in front of the fireplace with her mother, and we were burning the legal volumes, because that was a form of heating. So we were burning this out, and somehow I came out with my connection with the law profession. And she knew then my origins. And when Mrs. Wedecka came to her and asked if she would let a room to my mother, she said yes. And my mother was there till the war surviving. She never paid over the odds. She paid no more rent for her board and lodging. She was treated wonderfully by the whole family. In fact, in the second adjoining room, there was another lady of Jewish origin, the mother-in-law of a very well-known manufacturer of, I think, wallpapers, Franaszek. This was a much older lady. All I know is that her name was Pani Michalina. And they both lived there without any restrictions. I used to come there as a friend of Hania. Nobody other than Mrs. Nowodwórska knew my connection with my mother, although they probably guessed that. She managed to maintain my mother's spirits wonderfully. She would let her 4-year-old daughter go out with my mother for a walk. And my mother said, "You're taking a risk." She said, "It's perfectly all right." When my mother's money ran out, I think it was probably beginning of 44, maybe earlier, she let her stay on and said, "Not to worry, she will pay, she can pay her after the war." In fact, my parents did repay after the war by having her to stay with them several times and giving her all the help they could during the difficult period. But there was another occasion. She was, this is what was very active in what was known as Patrona, which was an association of people looking after German prisoners of the Germans in the Pawiak prison in Warsaw. And they were organizing various activities for raising funds for the prisoners. Among others, they had clandestine concerts. And on one occasion, when I was staying with her daughter, she was taking her daughter to sell programs at one of these concerts, and she said to my mother, "I'll take Barbara as well." And my mother said, "You can't, she's too well known, because we live right in the center of Warsaw, away from the Jewish quarter. Somebody could say something." And this lady's reply was, "If Barbara is with me, nobody will say anything." And I did. I saw his programs with her daughter without anything being said. Then I came to live in Warsaw, and I was housed with the family of a lady dentist, a Mrs. Tchaikovska. CZAJKOWSKA, who had a daughter of my age. Strangely enough, the daughter was much more Jewish looking than I was, although there was no Jewish blood there. She had curly black hair and dark eyes. So I think if we were stopped in the street, she would have been the one who caused us to be stopped. And at that time, I was accepted as a girl guide, and I was going to meetings and various activities. So I was surrounded by Polish friends. Everybody knew that my father was in the Polish army abroad, and nobody asked any other questions. So we were doing our first aid courses and all that sort of thing.
It sounds like you were leading a sort of fairly normal life.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. Apart from the fact that I was separated from my mother and I didn't see her, but sometimes we would meet and we would walk together. On one occasion, just before Christmas 43, we were walking very well close to where we used to live, and my mother stopped to buy a newspaper. And the newspaper seller, the woman, turned round to her and said, "Madam, I am so happy to see you. How is the master and the young master?" So my mother nearly collapsed on the spot. So she said, "Who do you think I am?" She said, "Madam, I used to bring the Sunday papers to your house always." Now, at one point, when we were both at Mrs. Wedecka's house, we had a very unpleasant experience. Her daughter was holding a clandestine meeting in one room. We were sleeping in Mrs. Wedecka's bedroom, which was in a single-story extension at the back of a block of flats. When there was a great banging on the door, Mrs. Wedecka jumped through the bedroom door and said, "Out on the..." There was a flat room outside the window. "Out sounds like the Gestapo." And my mother jumped out, and I didn't. I stayed in bed. But there was a big sort of eiderdown, and one corner was thrown off as my mother jumped out. And there were big down pillows. And I just put my head under the pillow. So when it wasn't a Gestapo, it was an agent, he came in and turned to Mrs. Wedecka and said, "Who was quickly sleeping in this bed?" And she said, "It's my bedroom." I was. I mean, she was wondering where we were. And that was it. So we were very, very lucky. My poor mother, when she realized that I was still inside, nearly died on her from behind the window on the flat roof. But that was the only time we were really exposed to danger. Then I stayed with various people. I can't remember really whom I stayed with, but various friends. One of the people who were also helping us throughout was the family of a friend of my brother's from school. The father was a professor at the Academy of Art, a professor of Lennart, L-E-N-A-R-T. They had two sons, both of whom were heavily involved in the underground, who regarded me as a little sister and were always there for me. Sadly, they were both killed in the Warsaw Rising. They were in the battalion Zoshka, which was very, very famous in the annals of the Polish underground. That is jumping ahead, but I met the younger one of them during the Warsaw Rising on the 1st of September, where he told me that his brother had died in his own city. He said his parents were dead. And he said, we had only two left. Because I took it at that point that my mother was dead as well. And he wanted me to go with him. But I was with another unit, and I didn't feel like moving on. If I had, I would have died with him, because he was killed about 10 days later. But that was another family who were not afraid to give us all the help. That's where we used to meet with my mother, because we both go there. And I remember being there when Yash, which is short for John, was going on an action, which we heard of afterwards, against the sabotage against the Germans. So, but that was normal. That was more or less normal life in Warsaw.
It's interesting because one often hears of the anti-Semitism of Poles, and yet you are implying that these people who would have known your Jewish origins
yes.
were so kind and generous. Is
they
that
were.
So?
They were. I have never experienced anybody being nasty to me through my Jewishness or my Jewish origins afterwards. But I think perhaps it was because I belonged. I felt I belonged. I didn't feel that I was Jewish and therefore a member of a different community. I was Polish, I was suffering what all the Polish people were suffering. I had the added disadvantage of being of Jewish origin, but so many of my friends were partly in hiding. Their parents or their mothers had been arrested. The girl who was in charge of our little group in the guys, her mother was in Auschwitz. Her father had been killed by the Germans. So she was on her own with a younger brother. That was normal. The Poles were suffering as well.
Had you heard of Katyn at this time?
Yes. Yes, we heard of Katyn, and I don't think anybody really believed that it was the Germans, because there were so many people who had kept communications while the Russians were in that area, and the communications ceased before the Germans went in. So people were talking of the Russians, but Russians were also always regarded as a great enemy of the Poles. But yet we had heard about it. And so we got to 1944, and we are already getting news of what was going on. We had access to underground papers, invasion, great joy, and great tension. What was going to happen? We had heard of the arrest of the Polish leaders by the Russians, the way they were behaving when they were occupying Eastern territories. But at the same time, we needed to get rid of the Germans. So when the trains, we heard of the trains of wounded Germans coming through Poland, there was great rejoicing. I mean, they tried to feed us propaganda through loudspeakers in the streets. And then in the spring, I think it was late spring, the Germans became even more cruel. They started taking people off the streets. I can't remember, maybe it was even earlier. I think it was in the spring of 44. They started taking hostages. And it was 10 or more per each German who was, I think it was more, per German who was killed by the underground. And the way this was done was they would suddenly close the whole street. They would arrive lorries full of soldiers and block the ends of the street, two ends. And anybody who was walking in the street would be loaded onto the lorries and taken to prison. And then their names were put up on billboards saying that if the next German soldier is killed, these people would be executed. And that was a terrible period, because it was completely random. And when they were carrying out the executions, they would bring them out into a street. The first ones were not gagged, and they would call out, you know, God save Poland and that sort of thing. But later on, they started gagging them. And I saw one of the executions, because I was on my way to a guys' meeting. And I saw the execution, and it was dreadful. They were just shot. But you should see, immediately after, as soon as the Germans had left, there would be a sea of candles and red and white flowers. I still have a little essay and poem which I wrote about the executions, and I will translate it now. Once again, on the walls of Warsaw hangs the dreaded red list. In front of it, with eyes looking at the black rows of names, stand crowds. More than once you hear the scream of a woman who had seen in the names of the hostages her father, husband or son. If once again there will be an attack on a member of the Gestapo, an SS man, an SA man, a soldier of the Wehrmacht, of the Field Gendarmerie, or any other German unit, or on a person of German nationality, the following will be executed. And here comes a long list of names. We know well that they will have to die, these hostages for our country. More than one German will have to die for his murderous acts. For each German, 10 of our fathers, sons, husbands, brothers. It's a great sacrifice, but we are ready for the sacrifices. Our eyes are looking for the names of our dear ones among those murderous hostages. Yes, here it is. It came. His moment has come. He always said that his dream is to give everything for Poland, and now he will have to give it his new young life. My friend, a real hero. A day passes with everybody waiting anxiously for news which will shake the old walls of Warsaw. They've been executed. I shall go in the procession of people to the place of execution. There will be a little wooden cross at the place where they walked on their last journey. Women will be kissing the still warm places of their children. The Germans, nothing will save the Germans. The Poles are not afraid of them. Nobody will forget the places of execution. We will not forget the memories of Auschwitz, of Majdanek. I have a white... carnation, and I will dip it in their blood, in the blood of my friends. I'm not going to cry. This is not the time for crying. Crying will not return them to life. We have to avenge them. In my soul, I can hear the words